Mr. Deuce, Real Five. We were talking about your time at the divisional headquarters, Commonwealth Division headquarters, where you were with the aid post of the signallers. What other sort of duties did you do, or can you remember any sort of cases you dealt with during that period? You were with them a long time.
Well, there was one case where a battery sergeant major in the Royal Artillery got knocked over by a 1500 weight truck and severely injured his back. So we went and picked him up by ambulance and brought him back to the MI room. And we left him on the ambulance while the MO checked him over properly. He was packed with sandbags to stop him swaying about on the rough road. And he decided it should be airlifted to the FDS, which the medical officer, who I think was I'm not sure now whether it was Captain Carreras or I can't think of the other one.
Doesn't matter. Too
Ken
much.
Sheridan Dawes is the hyphen name. And however, we put a couple of sheets out to make a cross for the helicopter to land on, and we loaded him onto this helicopter, which had canisters either side for patients for airlifting. And apparently, when he broke his back. So that was one incident.
And were many airlifted out by helicopter?
That is the only one we airlifted out. And then there was another one, it was at lunchtime, we got the telephone call. A Royal Engineer Corporal was grading the road, you know, levelling it off the best they could. I mean, it was only a rough old track, as the sand is, and he went over, and the whole lot finished up in a where we had to get the Royal Tank Regiment to pull the grader off. Obviously, he was really dead. And then we had to, eight of us had to, on one stretcher, trying to get him up a steep slope to get him into the ambulance, where we took him to the Canadian FDS for the MO to pronounce him as dead and put him in the mortuary. Unfortunately, that was the end of his career. But they're the only two, well, shall we say, quite serious cases I've had to deal with, you know. It's
so what would a typical day be like for you, you know?
Typical day is get up, say, around about half past six, prepare the MI room for sick parade, breakfast, back, sick parade. Go and see how many we've got, write the names all in the MO's register, so he'd call them in as they're in the register. And he would treat them, whether they got penicillin or whatever their ailment. If it was tinea, then you get some Genetian violet and paint them with that, and which all comes out on your underclothes. And mainly tablets, you know. But and then it's usually finished by 10 o'clock. And then the career nurse boy make you tea and toast. And then it's then if you've got any inoculations or vaccinations to do after lunch, then we get on with them. Sometimes I used to get in the ambulance and take a memo down to the FDS to pick up some supplies, what we were getting short of. All the stuff had to be mixed up ourselves. Didn't come so you can pour it out the bottle. You have to, you know, mix it all up, so much of this, and then top it up with water and give it a good shake. And afternoon, I say it used to be mainly if we've got a company, New Zealanders, all this, a company of the, or a squadron, or whatever, you know, of the Royal Signals. Then there was the landing strip, 1904 landing strip. They used to come over to RM. The RMPs, they used to be under us as well. The Royal Artillery, 16 like ACAC, they were all come under RM Irem. They were all different times where they'd got to have their vaccinations and inoculations, and then if there was none of them, then it used to be a quiet afternoon, perhaps. And then go and have your lunch, quiet afternoon, then tea, then the evening is yours. Just
what would you do in the evening?
Just lay on your bed or pop up the naffy and have a bottle of beer, perhaps.
What was the naffy like, the naffy canteen? Can you describe it and what it offered for you?
Well, that is all it offered. It's a Coke or a bottle of Asahi beer and cigarettes. We used to get 50 issued a week, a razor blade and a bar of chocolate. And that was your weekly issue. But then if you... like myself, I used to smoke a damn sight more then, so I used to have to go up there and get some more. That was mainly senior service or players.
Did it have any sort of games, like, you know, darts? No. Or anything to do in there?
We did have one dart match. That was the Royal Corps of Signals played the... 10 infantry workshops. That was it. But the MO I had then, he didn't hold with alcohol. See, so I had to drink orange juice. But, and he was still waiting in the MO room when I got back to make sure I assume that's what he'd done for. But that was the only game. There was a dartboard there if you wish to use it. There was not that many.
So there wasn't much recreation arranged in
no,
the canteen?
No.
Any shows or, you know, anything
like
that?
I did see... That was not in Korea. I didn't see any shows. But there was shows there. They used to stay at the officers' mess. Well, they used to come to the officers' mess of the Royal Signals, and the MO would bring them in and show them what the medical room was like. I can't remember the names of who came there now. Not that many, but there was the odd occasional show.
Now, what about the food? What was the food like that you got in Korea? The sort of rations?
Well, you had a cereal, or it was always a fried breakfast, you know, with the old of bacon, eggs, fried bread, you know, and jam, you know, if you wanted to make your own sandwiches or whatever. And lunch was mainly of chicken, you know.
How? Was it just cooked in different methods or just roasted?
Sometimes it was cooked, you know. It all depends on the chef, whether he say, well, we'll have roast today and then we'll have it some other way another day. You know, it didn't vary that much. And it used to get a sweet, and then tea, that used to be ash or something like that. You know, it's hot, so you had three hot meals a day. It's entirely up to you. If you
so
want.
The food was okay?
I didn't mind it. I got a bit fed up with chicken, obviously, and that's why I don't eat chicken now, I think. Not as often as the wife does.
And what about your tents? Were they comfortable to live in? We talked a bit about them. They were dug in, but, you know.
Yeah, but when I got to the MI room, it was ground level. I used to put, that was the other corporal's bed. It was on two boxes. And it was a stretcher on two boxes. And you put your sleeping bag on top of that and a blanket over that. And surprisingly enough, it wasn't that bad. A lot better than some of the other tent. You know, because they had it. Then we got rid of the stretchers on the bed, on the boxes, and got a decent sort of bed. You know, the old wire one, but it was comfortable.
Were the tents comfortable overall? I mean,
yeah, you got there again. We were fortunate being in the MI room. We used to have the diesel heating system, you know, with a stove in the middle of the room and a diesel can outside with a drip feed on in the sand at the bottom of the fire. That soaked and that kept alight. So when we knew we was getting low on diesel, being in the MI room, it got to have heating. If you get my guess, you see, the same goes for water. We'd got to have it. So, which other places, some of the other tents wasn't so fortunate. So, in actual fact, being in the MI room, were looked after that little bit better than the others. It's the same when we went on out in reserve or went on an exercise. I'd got an ambulance to sleep in. The others hadn't.
Now, would that be after the ceasefire, the exercise?
Yes.
Now, what about your Korean... You mentioned a Korean servant. Did you have Korean servants?
We had a Korean houseboy, Johnny.
What did he do for you? What was he like?
He was great. He was really great boy. He was an interpreter as well, if should any of the Korean labourers about brought in, you know, with something wrong with them, couldn't speak English. Johnny was there to do all the necessary. Yeah, he was a great boy, and he used to treat the Koreans if there was anything wrong, you know, to a certain extent. I don't mean giving injections or anything like that. That was our job.
But and what did he do for you as a servant? I mean, would he... Would he do your kit? And
No. He used to keep that our sleeping quarters, which is one end of the tent. He'd keep that clean, and you made your own beds, obviously. Well, it's only a sleeping bag, you'd only got to get out of it and pull it up. And as I say, he used to make tea and toast for the MO in the morning. So we all had tea and toast about half 10 when the sick parade was over. And he used to, you know, do little odd jobs. Then he'd say, "Well, I'm off now," and he used to go and have a noddle with his Korean friends, and then he'd be back after lunch. And
was he well treated by the men and
yourself? Yes. He was a great lad.
Did you see any of the other Koreans much? I mean, did you have any sort of view or relationship with any of the villagers or anything, or were you just not in contact with them?
Unless we were on exercise or in reserve, they'd only got to see a Red Cross, and they were there in droves, you know, and that's when Johnny used to come handy, because they'd want this, that and the other, and you couldn't get through to them that we didn't do that sort of thing. So he used to have to interpret to the MO if he thought it was serious, you know, or bad enough to treat them, then we would give them, you know, something that they would go. But apart from that, very, very few. So I never had nothing to do with the villagers. No.
Now, what about the ceasefire? I mean, were you aware of what was happening in the war? And what did you think when the ceasefire was coming?
Well, we were, like everybody, I suppose, we were all pleased to know that it was was on its way, you know, and when they announced that the ceasefire was here, that was, you know, it was great.
Well, when was it? I'm not quite sure when the actual ceasefire came.
July the 27th.
53. Sorry, I'm mistaken, yeah. And what difference did it make for you when the ceasefire came?
Well, us being that far behind the line, you know, I don't know how many miles we were behind the line, but it didn't really make that much difference to us because not seeing frontline action, we just carried on normally. The only good thing that came out of it is that we knew they weren't going to be, we weren't going to be shelled or whatever. You know, it's that was, I suppose it was a relief to know that. But as I say, being that far behind the line, we didn't, it didn't affect us that much.
Did you get more permanent accommodation than tents? I mean, did they start building a camp or?
No, we were the only one that had a Quonset hut.
What hut?
Quonset. Don't ask me if it's, please. But it was a shed, you know, an oval hut. We put a partition across, so we had our living quarters and the MI, and it had a proper floor, you know. It was a damn sight warmer and better than what the rest of the camp had. Even the CO, the company commander, and Major General West didn't even have one of them.
And I presume your basic duties stayed the same. How did life change? I mean, you mentioned going on exercises and in being in reserve. What do you mean by that? What sort of exercises would you go on?
Well, it was only just, we used to go out and the Royal Signals used to set their points up, you know, and do their job. All we done was the MO and the medical, so we used to use the ambulance as an MI room. When we had the big ambulance, but if we only had a jeep ambulance, we used to have to put a tent up. Well, we had to put a tent up because we had them, the ambulance jeeps, which only carry two stretchers, was all we had for quite a while. Then if we had a Canadian driver, ambulance driver, we used to get ambulance jeeps. If the British RASC come in, then we used to get the big ambulance, you know, one of those that sways about a bit. That was all right. But if you had the jeep ambulance, we had to put a tent up because there wasn't room in, well, you couldn't walk in them,
so
as simple as that.
You just set up your normal medical inspections.
That's right.
Do your normal duties.
Yeah, and then if anybody comes sick, we used to have to sprained ankle or something like that, and then we used to have to treat accordingly.
Did you get any local leave, particularly?
Yeah,
because you were there a long time.
Yeah, I had two leaves while I was in Korea.
Tell me about them. Where would you go and what did you do?
Ebisu in Japan. We used to get a lorry down to Seoul, pick up a globe, you know, get on a Globemaster, as they were called, passenger plane, transport, and then fly to, I assume it was Ebisu Airport. Yeah, then we went by truck to the camp, of which had you'd get out of your combat gear from Korea into a ordinary uniform, British uniform, no flashes on, obviously, but and then it was a rest and recuperation, they called it. You can have a walk around Ebisu or get a train out to Tokyo if you wished.
Did you do that?
I went to Tokyo once. Yeah.
What was it like?
It was a great place, what little I see of it, because as soon as we got there, we had a look around American PX, and then it was back on the train and back to Ebisu. the first time, and I was on leave the first time. I know I was on leave at coronation.
And it was a lot of drinking and you know that sort of.
Yeah, I mean, you walk down the road and all you see is beer halls, and nearly always full of servicemen.
Any trouble in the bar?
I never see any. No. No,
they're just friendly.
Touch
drink.
Wood. Just having a friendly relaxation, and that is a big bar in the camp, the Kookaburra Club. You could have stopped in there if you wanted to, but I couldn't see the sense in moving out of one camp into another and sit there all day long.
So you went out in episode?
Yeah, me and the first time I went with my mate from Goldstone, Fleming, and we had a good, you know, we didn't get pie-eyed or anything like that. We was back for our meals. But the second one, I went with a corporal, Naffy corporal, out of the Royal Signals, and we did have a better time then, because he was a damn lot older than I was. If he's still alive now, he must be 80. You know, he was in the last war, or the end of the last war.
The first
you know.
World War.
The Second World War, yeah.
The Second World War,
yeah. He was a paratrooper as well.
And so, anything else about your time at Ebisaw, or is that...?
that was firstly it. I mean, you had waitress service, you know, so you didn't have to stand there rattling your mess tins or whatever. Just sit down at the table, got your meals brought to you, and finish that, go and have a bath, shower, and go out again if you wish.
And how long would you get?
7 days. Yeah, 7 days leave. I had 14 days over there altogether. And then they got a leave camp in Korea itself at Incheon.
Did you go there?
I went there once. You had 5 days up there in Incheon, which wasn't that great. It was a camp, tents. And, well, there was nowhere to go. In actual fact, I thought it was a waste of 5 days.
So it was just a...
It just got you out of your camp, and it was a change of faces, really, more than anything.
Anything else about your time before you came to be posted back in, I think, because you were there till July 54, so about another year after the ceasefire. Anything happened that you remember?
No.
Just routine?
Just routine, day by day. Every day was virtually the same.
And what rank were you? Did it make a difference? You left corporal, get any promotion while you were there?
No, I only just made up the Lance Corporal in charge of the MI room. And that was it, you know.
Did it make a difference being Lance Corporal?
No,
I mean, to you or to...
No. You can't pull rank on another couple of people, can you? Otherwise you fall out and you've got a miserable life all round then.
So, in July, what happened in July then, when you came to leave? July 54.
July 54, I had another, I think he was in the Duke of Wellington's, through the same procedure. He came and he took over my job, and I gradually packed me, you know, packed all my stuff up, went and see a lot of the others that had been there, you know, quite a while, and we all met in the Naffy one night, and we had a drink, and packed all my gear up for, I think it was 8:30, the lorry come after us, slung me kit on the back of it, got in, and Sergeant Offord was already on there, and we went to rear division, picked up Fleming, then headed for Seoul, and back down to Busan, where we joined the 1st Battalion of the Royal Scots.
What house? As a
well, they were then leaving Korea as a battalion, and we travelled on their boat as far as Hong Kong. They were going on to the Middle East, I think, they went.
Anything about the journey, or was it just...
Well, it was just an ordinary bagpipes got you up in the morning. Oh, what a row. And it was just an ordinary day-to-day life, you know, nothing to do.
So was it still... It's still July when you got to Hong Kong, was it?
Yeah, I'm fairly sure
and
it was,
And
yeah.
What happened there? That's where you left the Scots, I presume. And did you rejoin?
They were kept on the boat. When we was in Pusan, Sergeant Offord went and asked the camp commandant there, or somebody in charge down there, if we could travel back to England via the Panama Canal to let those that are due for the mob in Pusan get home quicker, because it's a longer journey round via the Panama. And he utterly said, no, you're to join your battalion. So,
now, where were they? That's the 1st Battalion Royal North Regiment. Where were they when you joined them?
Well, we all went to where they had the mural, so that would be B Stables.
And who were you joining at B Stables?
The 1st Battalion.
No, I mean, which company were you put in?
I went to HQ Company. I don't know where Sergeant Offord finished up, but I'm sure Fleming finished up in C Company, or D Company. C Company, I think it was.
And what were you going to be as in HQ Company? Were you still a medical orderly, or what were they doing with you?
When we went, because we had to go and see the commanding officer.
That would be, was it Turner Kane then?
Yeah, yeah. And obviously they had to make me back to a private because I wasn't substantiated as Lance Corporal, that was only an acting rank. And he wanted me to go into the MI room and try and teach Sergeant Compton, who was in charge, you know, the way to look after patients. Well, I'd never... It was like working in a hospital. So you'd got more in beds. Well, I'd never been used to that. I was used to them walking in. If you wanted a penicillin injection, right, drop your trousers, and then here we go, type of thing. I'd never given an injection with anybody laying down. So then I went on my third class education. And that.
Do you remember anything else about the interview with Turner Kane?
No, he just welcomed us to the regiment, back to the regiment, and asked us if we was feeling okay, and told us what, you know, he expected of us.
Now, were you actually posted to the regimental aid post, you know, to the MI room, or were you just...
I went down there on a couple of occasions, and to report to Sergeant Compton, and then, as I say, I went to do my third class education.
So they kept you in headquarters?
Oh, yes, I was.
But they hadn't actually assigned you to anything yet?
No.
Tell me about the third class education.
Well, we just went, well, it was like going to school. You went in only mornings only. You sat down there, you know, in the classroom with the education sergeant, and just done the papers he put in front of you, and the best of your ability.
How did you find it?
Quite interesting, really. In actual fact, I think I learnt nearly as much there in that month, or 2 or 3 weeks, than I did at school.